Okay, let's unpack this. I want you to picture your weekly routine. You walk into the grocery store, you push your cart down that one specific aisle.
Mm-hmm. The pet food aisle.
Exactly. The one with the bright bags, the happy golden retrievers on the labels, all that text promising complete and balanced nutrition. You grab a bag of kibble, toss it in the cart, and you feel good, like a responsible pet owner. But what if, and just, you know, bear with me here because this is a jarring thought, what if that sign is a lie? What if, according to the source we have today, it shouldn't say pet food, it should actually say dog poison and cat poison?
It's a provocative way to start, for sure. It completely upends that comfort zone we all have as consumers. But that really is the central, startling premise of the material we're looking at today. We're doing a deep dive into multi-billion dollar pet food fraud, hiding in plain sight, by Dr. Tom Lonsdale.
And it's just to be clear for everyone listening, this isn't some, you know, fringe blog post. Dr. Lonsdale is a veterinarian, decades of experience, and he's basically turned whistleblower on his own profession.
He really has.
So the mission here is to really get our heads around his argument, which is huge. He's alleging a collaborative fraud between junk pet food makers and the veterinary establishment.
Exactly. And what's fascinating here is he isn't just complaining that the food is, you know, subpar. He's drawing a direct line between this industrial diet and the chronic diseases we see all the time, gum disease, diabetes, cancer, all of it.
So before we get to his solution, he calls it raw meaty bones, we have to understand how we even got here. Because dogs used to eat, well, whatever they could get their paws on, right? How did we end up with these dry brown pebbles as the standard for dinner?
To understand that, the source takes us way back. We're talking 1860s London. And it starts with this guy, an American electrician of all things, named Jack Spratt.
An electrician.
Yeah, a bit random. He was in London to sell lightning conductors. But what he saw on the docks changed everything. He watched stray dogs scavenging for ship's biscuits.
Oh, like hardtack. Just flour and water baked into a brick, basically.
Precisely. It's barely food. But Spratt saw dogs eating this and had a light bulb moment. He thought, I can market this.
Mm.
So he created dog cakes, a mix of wheat, beetroot, and some beef blood.
Wow.
And he teamed up with Charles Kruft, the guy who started the famous dog shows. And they made processed food a status symbol.
So it was a convenience thing for city people back then, but when did it become this massive industrial machine?
Well, that happened in phases. You fast forward to the 1920s in the U.S., and you get a guy named Philip Chappell. He had a surplus of unwanted army horses after World War I.
Oh, wow. I think I can see where this is going.
It's pretty grim, but yes.
Yeah.
He canned the horse meat and sold it as Ken L. Ration.
So that's the birth of canned food.
It is. They even had Rin Tin Tin as a mascot. But the real game changer, the moment the modern industry was truly born, was 1957. That's when Purina introduced extrusion technology.
Extrusion? That sounds more like making plastic than making food.
It's remarkably similar. I mean, it's the same basic engineering. You pump ingredients, mostly grains, some meat meal, through a tube under extreme heat and pressure. And as it comes out the other end, it gets puffed up with air.
So it's basically a savory breakfast cereal.
Correct. But here's the problem Lonsdale highlights. That heat and pressure, it destroys the natural enzymes, the vitamins. It denatures the protein. So to make it nutritious again, they have to spray a coating of fats, vitamins, and flavor enhancers onto the outside of the kibble.
So it's dead food with a multivitamin spray tan.
And a lot of carbohydrates. That's the key. For the extrusion to work, you need starch. You need grains to make it all bind together. So you end up with a high-carb diet for an animal that is biologically a carnivore.
And that's basically the entire dry food aisle today. What really blew my mind in the reading was who owns these companies. They're not really pet companies, are they?
No, not at all. The source identifies the big three that dominate the global market. You've got Mars, the candy company, which owns Royal Canin and Pedigree. You've got Nestle, the coffee giant, which owns Purina. And you have Colgate-Palmolive, the toothpaste company, which owns Hill's Science Diet.
Toothpaste and candy companies making dinner for what are essentially domesticated wolves. It's just, it sounds wrong when you say it out loud.
And that's the core of Lonsdale's biological mismatch argument. He uses this great analogy of putting the wrong fuel in a car.
Right.
If you put diesel in a petrol engine, the car just stops.
Yeah.
Immediately. You know there's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But a biological system is more resilient. If you put the wrong fuel grain-based carbs into a carnivore, the body tries to compensate.
It keeps running, but the engine is knocking.
Exactly. The liver, the kidneys, the immune system, they all work overtime. The animal survives, but it's living in a state of chronic malaise.
There was this one story in the book that really turned my stomach, Ruby the Poodle. It just illustrates the point so perfectly.
Oh yes, that was a vivid example. Ruby was a five-month-old puppy. She'd eaten some chocolate, so her owners took her to Lonsdale to induce vomiting.
Just a precaution.
Right. But when Ruby threw up, it wasn't really chocolate. It was piles of Nestle Purina Supercoat kibble.
And the kicker was, she had eaten that kibble 12 hours earlier.
12 hours. And the source notes that the kibble was just swollen and slimy, but otherwise completely intact. It hadn't broken down at all.
Just sitting in her stomach.
Lonsdale calls them doom nuggets.
Doom nuggets. Wow, that sticks with you. It really drives home the point that this stuff is just incredibly hard for a carnivore system to process.
Which is the exact opposite of raw meat, which would be digested and gone in a fraction of that time.
So we have this industrial machine pumping out what the author claims isn't really food, but this is where it gets, I don't know, disturbing is maybe the word. If this food is so bad, why aren't vets warning us? Why are they the ones selling it in their waiting rooms?
This is what he calls the white coat betrayal. And it's a heavy, heavy accusation. He argues the veterinary profession has lost its moral compass, that instead of being guardians of animal health, they've become a protective cordon for the pet food industry.
The book describes the vet school at Sydney University, and it sounds less like a hospital and more like a corporate showroom.
It does. The entrance is covered in corporate logos. Students are walking around in Hill's branded shirts, taking notes with Royal Canin pens. The indoctrination starts on day one. Lonsdale says they get these goodie bags and index handbooks that tell them exactly which product to sell for which ailment.
So critical thinking is just outsourced to the manufacturer. Dog has a kidney issue, sell bag A, skin issues, sell bag B.
Precisely. And the financial ties run deep. But the most insidious part, according to the text, is the whole dental industry.
Right.
We've just accepted that dogs and cats have doggy breath and rotting teeth and need these expensive cleanings under anesthesia.
The dental pro fee, the scaling and polishing.
Yes. And Lonsdale just points out the obvious. Wild animals don't have dentists. Wolves, lions, they don't brush their teeth. But they don't get the rampant gum disease we see in pets. Their teeth are cleaned every day by the simple act of ripping and tearing through meat and bone.
So the argument is vets sell the soft, carb-heavy food that rots the teeth.
And then they sell the expensive dental procedure to fix the rotten teeth. He calls it over-servicing, profiting from both the cause and the cure.
That's a brutal cycle. And for Dr. Lonsdale, this isn't just an abstract idea, is it? He shares a really personal story about a dog named Duchess that seemed like his turning point.
It really was. Duchess was a Maltese terrier he treated since she was a puppy. For years, he did everything by the book, vaccines, worming pills, all of it. But he admits he totally ignored her diet, just let her eat the standard industrial food. And eventually, she developed heart failure, premature aging. He realized he had committed errors of omission. By not addressing her diet, he felt he had contributed to her suffering.
Wow. That guilt is a powerful motivator.
It seems to be what fuels his whole campaign.
Okay, so let's pivot to the solution. He's not just saying feed them steak. He has this very specific protocol, raw meaty bones, or RMB. What does that actually mean?
It is so crucial to get this definition right, because he's very specific about it. It's not just meat, because meat alone doesn't have enough calcium.
Right. Their bones would get brittle.
And it's not just bones, because bare bones can break their teeth. It has to be meaty bones. The source material calls it the carnivore code. You know, dogs and cats are basically modified wolves and desert predators. Their biological job is to hunt and eat prey.
The whole package.
The whole package. Yeah. Skin, bone, meat, organs, everything.
So give us the shopping list. What are we actually talking about putting in the bowl?
The essentials list in the book has things like chicken frames. Mm-hmm. You know, the carcass after the breast meat is gone, quail, kangaroo tail, sheep heads.
I can hear some people pausing right now thinking, sheep heads, in my kitchen, it is definitely a shift from pouring pellets into a bowl.
It is. But Lonsdale argues this is actually food as medicine. He lists 9 different medicinal benefits.
And some are surprising. It's not just about teeth.
No. Obviously, there's the nature's toothbrush effect, scraping off tartar. But he also talks about the release of endorphins.
The feeding frenzy.
Yes. When a carnivore actually gets to rip and tear at a carcass, it releases happy hormones. It's a psychological release that satisfies a deep instinct. And then there's the gut health. Raw food has enzymes that are pancreas-sparing, so the body doesn't have to work as hard to digest it.
So if I'm convinced, how much am I feeding? What's the ratio?
The guide is about 15 to 20% of the pet's body weight per week, or roughly 2 to 3% per day. But here's where it gets really interesting for dog owners. He recommends fasting.
Fasting, like not feeding them at all.
For adult dogs, yeah. He suggests skipping 1 or 2 days a week.
And what's the logic there?
The logic is that a wolf doesn't catch a deer every single day at 6 p.m. sharp. Their systems are designed for a gorge and fast cycle. It gives their digestive system a rest. But he's very clear, you never fast cats or puppies. This is strictly for adult dogs.
That makes a lot of sense biologically, even if it feels a little mean to us humans. But let's talk results. The book is full of testimonials. Any that really stood out to you?
There are several, but the story of George the Maine Coon cat was pretty incredible. George was diagnosed with diabetes, urinating constantly, his coat was a mess. The vet prescribed insulin, which was going to cost hundreds of dollars, plus ongoing costs for life.
A classic case of managing the disease, not curing it.
Exactly. But the owners read about Lonsdale and decided to try the diet change first. They switched George to raw rabbit and quail. The result, the diabetes symptoms just vanished. They never even bought the insulin. His coat got glossy again. He was effectively cured just by taking away the carbs.
That is amazing. And what about Titan the boxer?
Titan was a 32-kilogram obese dog. He was lethargic, had terrible doggy breath. After just 5 weeks on the raw meaty bones diet, he lost 6 kilos, regained his energy, and the smell just disappeared.
You mentioned the smell. Lonsdale actually uses a smell test as a diagnostic tool, doesn't he?
He does. He argues we rely too much on complex blood tests. He says, just use your senses. A healthy pet should not have doggy breath or that greasy dog skin odor. If your pet smells bad, it's a sign their body is pushing out waste products through their skin and lungs because the diet is overloading their system. A healthy raw-fed dog basically has no odor.
Okay, I can feel listeners nodding along, but I can also hear the objections screaming in their heads. And the big one is bacteria, Salmonella, E. coli.
Of course.
We are drilled to be terrified of raw chicken.
And for us, for humans, we should be. The source addresses this fear directly. Lonsdale admits factory-farmed meat has bacteria, but he says we have to look at the physiology. Carnivores are scavengers. Their digestive systems are short and highly acidic, way more acidic than ours. They're designed to handle bacterial loads that would put a human in the hospital.
So the risk is more for us handling the food, not for the dog eating it?
Primarily, yes.
Yeah.
The advice is just basic hygiene. Wash your hands, clean the surfaces, pick up the poop, just like you would if you were making chicken for your own dinner.
Okay, and the other big fear, bones. We've all been told, never feed a dog chicken bones, they'll splinter.
This is a critical point that needs to be clarified. Lonsdale agrees that bones can be dangerous, but only under specific conditions. If you cook a bone, the heat removes the moisture and collagen. It becomes brittle and sharp. That's when it splinters. So the rule is absolute. Never, ever feed cooked bones.
So rule number one, raw only.
Correct. And rule number two is size. Don't chop bones into small pieces. That's a choking hazard. He says to feed large pieces, a whole chicken frame, a sheep head. It forces the animal to use its teeth to shear and crush, not just bolt it down whole.
It's about making them chew properly.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And he also warns against those bare bones, the big marrow knuckles with no meat on them. Dogs can break their teeth on those. It needs to be a meaty bone wrapped in muscle and tissue.
Got it. Now, what about the pet that's just addicted to the junk? I know cats can be incredibly picky. You put a raw quail in front of them and they just look at you like you're insane.
It's a real problem. The text explains that they get addicted to the flavor enhancers sprayed on the kibble. For cats, he suggests a switching strategy. First, stop free feeding. No more 24/7 buffet. Set meal times so they actually get hungry. Hunger is a tool.
But don't starve a fat cat, right? I heard that's dangerous.
Right. Fasting an obese cat can cause liver failure, so you have to be careful. The strategy is to mix a tiny bit of raw meat into their canned food and then slowly, slowly phase out the junk. It takes patience. So we've covered the fraud, the betrayal, the solution, the safety checks. When you step back and look at this whole deep dive, it really paints a stark picture, doesn't it?
It really does. The source presents a choice between two realities. One is a life of what Lonsdale calls solitary confinement, eating these industrial pellets that slowly poison them. The other is offering them the biological joy and health of a real carnivore diet.
And it brings us back to that huge question. Why isn't this mainstream? If the evidence is so clear, why aren't vets shouting this from the rooftops? The answer the book gives is the dead hand of the industry. There are billions and billions of dollars in profit at stake here. If everyone switched to cheap, raw, meaty bones from the butcher, those multinational giants would lose fortunes. And since they fund the universities and the research,
The status quo is protected.
It really makes you rethink every single trip to the vet.
It does. And I want to leave you with one final thought from Dr. Lonsdale that I found really profound. He talks about the organ of Jacobson.
The vomeronasal organ, right, in the roof of the mouth.
Yes. It's a sensory organ they use to sense the chemical makeup of what they're eating. Lonsdale suggests that your pet knows exactly what it's eating. It knows it's eating junk. It craves the nutrients it's missing. And he asks us to consider, are we ignoring their silent communication? Are we just misinterpreting their chronic malaise as getting old?
That is a haunting thought. Your pet knows, even if you don't. Well, that is a lot to chew on. Pun definitely intended. As always, and as the source material itself emphasizes, this challenges conventional advice, so the disclaimer here is to do your own research. Don't just take our word for it, and definitely don't just take the kibble bag's word for it.
Critical thinking is the best medicine.
Couldn't agree more. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. It's been an eye-opener.
It certainly has.
We'll catch you on the next one. Stay curious.